Podcast.
Welcome to the Almost Perfect Podcast, a celebration of fuck-ups, failures, and falling flat on your face. This is a podcast that believes you can learn from experience, but that experience doesn't have to be your own. Ha, I'm Bob Perfect, and I'm a functional fuck-up. Let's learn from somebody else's mistakes. And today we are learning from Ambrose Urine. Now, Ambrose is a comedian. He's been in the game for like 11 years. He recently did Edinburgh, and he's going to be heading back over to the UK early next year. So yeah, he's doing big things there, but he's also a breakdancer, or at least he's no longer competing and stuff. But yeah, the man spent a lot of time spinning around on his head. So yeah, we chat about that. He's also an actor. He's also a fucking actor. He studied that shit. So yeah, man's quite a creative and quite a dope dude. We already had a fun chat. Like, I just dig his vibe. And we met earlier this year when I was in Cape Town, but we chatted a little bit online before that. And yeah, just really dig his energy, really dig his vibe, and it was cool getting to know him. And you'll get to hear that chat in just a little bit. Of course, before that happens, I need to let you know that this podcast is brought to you by you. Or maybe not you, like, in particular. Not yet. That can be arranged. But yeah, this podcast is brought to you by people who go to patreon.com/almostperfect and subscribe for as little as $1 a month. There's multiple tiers there. You can go check that out for yourself. You can also head on over to the Almost Perfect website, almostperfect.co.z, where you can buy some merch. There's a sweater, there's t-shirts, there's mugs, and if you just want to donate a little bit of money, there's also a little Zapper thing there. You can just scan that with your phone and, like, you know, swing me $50 if you dig the episode and you're like, yeah, that was a good time. I learned something there. Let me swing Bob some money. almostperfect.co.z. Yeah, man, it's been a good fucking week. I kind of judge my weeks just based on how the Not Quite Right open mic goes at this point. And it's been a good 3 weeks in a row, basically, for the gig. But this one, we were fully packed out. I think we had 69 people, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, that's fucking dope, man, for an open mic gig in Durban. That's, like, I don't know, kind of unheard of, I think. And I mean, I've never been able to pull that off, like, even with the Winston and shits. We had some good gigs, and, like, we would, you know, like, with the festival and stuff like that, with the Heat City Comedy Festival, was able to draw decent crowds there and that. And we had big nights at the Winston, but never really for the open mic, you know, never just for, yeah, like, a bunch of random people getting on. And we had that. And I mean, obviously it's because Carvin Goldstone was hosting, and people were like, what, we can see Carvin for $30? But he was hosting, you know. He was just chatting to all the different people, figuring out where people were from, stuff like that. He wasn't necessarily giving them material because it was a 30 rand show. But it was a cool showcase, man. Like, I think I had a great set. Like, I'm actually going to throw it up on the Patreon. I'm gonna do that. It's just a little 6 minute clip, and it's all audio because I just recorded on my phone in my pocket. And yeah, I'm gonna put that up maybe a little bit later today, so you can hear for yourself whether or not I'm talking shit. But yeah, I had a great set. I had a really fun one, and most of the comedians did too. You know, for the most part, people stepped up. People really use the opportunity to show people, hey, we can do this thing too. Like, we know you know Robbie, we know you know Carvin, but there's more of us, and we've got jokes too. So hopefully more people come on through to the following week's open mic gigs. It's at Ace's Pizza every Wednesday. Come join us if you're in Durban. Can't remember who's hosting next week right now, but it's not Carvin, it's not Robbie, we know. But, you know, come through to the gig anyway. Even if you don't know who the host is, it'll be well worth your time. And tomorrow night, the 18th of November, I'm going to be hosting at Stumpnose. And we do have Robbie. We've got Robbie Collins. He's going to be headlining the show. So that's going to be a banging set. I'm hosting, like I said. I've got a lot of new shit that I've been working out at the open mic. So going to be coming with some interesting ideas. And then, yeah, we've got Tibbs, we've got Akil, we've got Vincent, and we've got Liam joining as well. That is 60 Rand pre-sale. You can get tickets on the Not Quite Right website, notquiterightcomedy.co.za, and it's 80 Rand at the door. And yeah, that's the vibes, man. We're just doing all comedy all the time at the moment. That's kind of the whole fucking vibe, and it's making me really stoked. So I'm looking forward to tomorrow. Hopefully I see some of you there. And with all that shilling out the way, it's time to get into the Almost Perfect Podcast with Ambrose Urine. So how are you living, Ambrose?
I am living good, man. How are you living?
Yeah, not too shabby. You know, something could be better, some things could be worse. So,
oh yeah,
you know,
it's always good.
Goldilocks life.
That's always Goldilocks life. Hey, man, you know what? You got to be prepared for everything. That's why I say good, because, you know, good can, they are bad, but I focus on what I need to focus on, which is the good.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense to anyone.
Maybe I think this makes sense a few people take that approach.
Yeah. I don't know if it's the right approach, but yeah, sometimes things are down. It's up and down, but I would say right now, good. Thanks for asking.
Well, it seems like you've had like quite a good year, man. Like, I know you went over to the Edinburgh Festival. I know you're going up to Joburg soon with your show Africanish. Yes. And that. So
yes.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. How did the show come about? When did you write it? Was it over a period of time? When did you perform it for the first time?
Yeah, it's been in the making now for a year or two, actually. I did a show last year called Nothing to Lose. And that was like a setup of like preempting Africanish, because, you know, after Nothing to Lose, I found out that, you know, some of the subjects and everything just wasn't working. And then I brainstormed some new ideas beginning of last year. And for Mother City Comedy Festival, that was the first time I did Africanish, the concept of me being Africanish. And then from there, I just kept on, you know, pushing the show and trying to come up with kind of the theme of the show and work around that. And I'm still doing that. And I've decided to make it a 4-year process.
Wow, you're really committing then.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. By the time it's, you know, after 4 years, I figure like the theme should be super solid and down and ready to record. And yeah, and then I'll take it from there. Like, most people aren't doing the long term like that now. So that's a bit different, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, in South Africa, I guess we do need that time. Like, I'm just even thinking about my show, It's Not the End of the World, which was originally the end of the world, but, like, then COVID hit. Like, and then, like, I had to rewrite it and everything. But I've been, like, struggling a little with that, just in terms of, like, people are kind of overhearing about that stuff. So I don't really know. Like, I might even just drop it entirely. And I've already got, like, the jokes I've got at the moment, like, and I'm working on are towards my next show anyway. So I'll see how that goes, you know. But
as a
South African comic,
yeah,
but also as a South African comic, you don't get as much time as like the Americans, you know, who are putting out shows every year or whatever to actually develop it. Like, I even look at Dylan's show that he's been working on. He's been working on that for about 2 years now, at least.
Yeah, the more time you put into a specific show or a themed show, the show's going to get a lot tighter, and that's what you ultimately want at the end, you know, at the end of the day with a solo show. You want it to be tight from start to end. You want everything to, like, for me, I like callbacks and things, so I tie in stories, and I want it to all tie in at the end with the funniest possible outcome. I think that's my goal with this whole thing, the funniest possible outcome.
How much of that is, you know, like you're sitting at home writing, and how much of it comes up on stage? Because I know as you do shows like this, obviously, you know, jokes are going to come up on the spot as well. But I assume you're also sitting at home with the pen and the pad, was you like trying to brainstorm?
Yes. Well, it's 50-50, I think. I do like a lot of it does happen on stage live, like where I would expand on something I haven't expanded on yet, like even in writing on like, at home or so. But then I do have moments where I sit down and actually just, you know, go through an idea, a thought, try and flesh it out with a pen and pad, and then take it to stage. But it's a balance between those two. I can't say which one is more and which is less. It's kind of, 50-50. You have to write it to the stage, and while you're on stage, explore what could be more as well.
And have you found, like, obviously doing the hour gives you that space a bit more than, like, you know, testing totally. Stuff in the clubs? Because I'm assuming, like, testing in the clubs, you're doing 10, 20 minutes, and you can't, like, build this entire narrative.
Oh, man, yeah. That is that's a kind of a painful part of coming from an hour, and then now, you come back home, and it's like, yo, please do a tight 7. I'm like, yeah, you got to choose, what callback can I, in the most quick possible time, do? Or, if it's not I've been playing around also a lot since I've been home. If I get these quick 7s or so, I try and make it fun for myself and not be too rigid. So I keep it loose, try a new idea or two, and then, then hit them with some of the show material. Yeah.
Yeah, those short sets are good for, just showcasing what you're good at, and then also for practicing and just like trying out some new stuff and
that's
like experimenting.
Yeah, it's the lab, right?
Yeah. But yeah, like you're saying, that the adjustments is quite big, because like you're saying, well, like I mentioned early on, you were in fucking Edinburgh. How did that all come about, man? Like, that's like obviously like such a big step for a South African comedian.
It was major. It was big. It was exciting. It was nerve-wracking. But it happened. I applied. I applied for it last year. And I have a friend in Sweden with a production company called Funny Swedish Girls Productions. Her name's Jessica. And she kind of produced my show and her show, which was called Queen and Sober. And so, what she did is she got some funding as well. Yeah, Queen and Sober. I know. Shout out. Shout out, Jessica. So, she managed to get funding from the Swedish Arts Grants Committee, and that sponsored both of us. And then I had to come up with the rest of the cash for, the accommodation and all these other the little things. But, it still comes up to a good number of your savings. But it's worth it, dude. Totally worth it. Totally worth the experience. Edinburgh is the university of comedy. I'm convinced now. That festival, the festival is a 1 month of comedy university, bro.
Yeah, I still need to go, man. Like, it's it's on the bucket list, of course. And like, once I can sort out the finance side, because unfortunately, the South African arts funding isn't doesn't really go to comedy much.
No, no, dude. Otherwise, I would have called them.
Yeah, like, but the musicians can get some touring money and shit like that. Like, you can even get some theater stuff. But I know, like, you're as a comedian trying to get funding out of the government, unless it's like local governments or tourism money, you're gonna struggle.
Oh yeah, true, man. You have to, like, I did a fundraiser. I did a fundraiser and I also did multiple runs of Africanish beforehand, just to save up cash for the Edinburgh run. Yeah, so that was my game plan going in.
So I take it you're kind of doing your comedy like it's a business these days.
Yes, totally. Yeah, totally. Last year I decided I'm gonna go full time. Like, I gave up my breakdance classes.
You're gonna get into this now. Yeah.
So, yeah, up until last year, I was still teaching and earning some money on the side from that. But then I decided to just fully dive into comedy. And yeah, that's why I'm a bit more, got my game plan figured out now. Yeah, takes a bit
what
of
made
thought.
You, like, yeah, like, take that step, because, I mean, you know, like, in South Africa, it's quite difficult to make it as just a comedian. Obviously, in Cape Town, there's quite a few more opportunities with regards to, like, adverts and film and, you know, various other aspects to it and that as well. But, you know, how did you come to that conclusion that, yeah, let's go for this?
Look, I was already a broke actor that before then. So I'm already used to it. I was like, hey, why not just commit to this thing that's actually fun and it brings joy to my life. And I'm growing, and I'm also expanding my network as I'm doing it. So by last year, it was my 10th year in the game, and actually this year was my 11th, is my 11th. And actually this year is my serious years. And things have kind of unfolded almost like the universe has kind of gone, okay, cool. We see, whatever it is, the powers knows what my intention is. So it's kind of giving me opportunities in the line of comedy now. So I'm very happy that I made the decision, because things are kind of falling in place as well. Yeah, it's a jump. You just jump and you see what's on the other side. And it's because I love comedy so much. That's why.
Yeah, so you're saying you've been in the game for 11 years now. Yes. When and where did you start? I'm assuming it's the armchair on a Sunday, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, it's actually that was where I got connected first. So I spoke to Rustam August, who was
belated, RIP.
And he gave me my first gig. I watched him one day at the armchair doing his bits, and I was like, my friend Lunga and I, we were like, let's do this, let's try. And then my first gig was at Ragazzi, actually. It was called Ragazzi in Long Street.
Yes.
I don't know if you ever, have you been,
yes,
have
I
you
did
seen?
That.
Have you been?
I did that because I was actually, like Rustam put me on in one of my early Cape Town trips.
Shout out, man. Yeah, Rustam he's that guy. He was that guy.
Yeah, man.
So it was Ragazzi, and I remember Carl Weber was hosting. He's from Cape Town. Tracy Klaas was on the lineup. Angel was on the lineup. Angel Campy, and then my friend Lunga Chuka, who was also still in the game and doing well. It was 2012. That was fun times, and then things happened from there.
Yeah, I mean, how's the evolution of the Cape Town scene been like since you've been there? Because I know right now you guys are in a big like upswing, and it's been like earlier in the year, and like even like Robbie and I were chatting last week, just being like, the Cape Town scene is fire at the moment. But I remember like I was there before COVID, and you know, I went from one gig to another, and both gigs were empty. So like I feel like it's been quite a roller coaster. So how's the journey been?
Oh man, since then.
It's
a roller coaster, up and down, humbling, many humbling moments. But I feel like the more you kind of believe that you know what you know, the more you believe in yourself. That sounds cheesy, but you just have to push your comedy and your style, and you know, that's ultimately what I'm learning, is that being independent is cool in comedy. So pushing your own, you know, brand, and no one else is going to do it for you. Also, you know, it's kind of a cutthroat business also when it comes to marketing yourself or competing, or, you know, it is competitive, but you don't start out competitive, but then, you know how it goes. But, it is, man, I've learned so much, bruh. Honestly, it just depends on the moment. On stage, off stage, meeting people, networking, that's the past few years, and this past year especially, getting to know people from overseas and international with the Edinburgh trips and all that, that has opened so many more doors now. So only, I think, in the past 3 or so years have, like, really cool, vital improvements started happening. Yeah. And it's when I started pushing myself a bit more and trying to take myself a bit more serious.
It also seems like that's in line with, like, you know, Cape Town's revival post COVID. Like,
I think that probably
helps. You know, you've got a lot more stages to get on now than like ever before.
Yes, no, the Cape Town scene is really at an all-time high right now since the COVID days. And even like Comedy Club was sort of, before COVID, it was almost, you know, it wasn't really thriving as it used to. And then COVID came, and then that was the last of the big, you know, clubs that kind of left. But now I feel like it's just, we are peaking. And I think it's because there's so many open micers that have realized they can run their own gigs, which is dope. I love it. You know, so now guys are opening up gigs, like, you know, willy-nilly, and it's amazing. Loving it.
Yeah, and I think that's because, like, of the necessity, you know, now that you don't have, like, the Cape Town Comedy Club. Like, I know they're still doing pop-up shows and stuff like that, but, like,
they do,
now that
they're
not, like, you know, at the club anymore, and, like, you know, doing the 3 or 4 shows a week, or however many it was, and, like, you know, there's now a bit more space, like, I think, and people were also like, oh, yeah. Oh shit, I got to do it myself now. And that's created such a cool vibe. Like, I've really, like I say, like, the last time I was there, like, I also noticed there was, like, quite a lot of camaraderie. Yeah, a little bit of competition and, like, you know, someone's talking shit about other O's. But for the most part,
It's love in Cape Town, eh? Yeah, it's love, bro. 100%, like, Cape Town comics, yeah. The love is there, man. The love. I can't fault that. I can't fault them for that.
They all came together for your fundraiser and shit. I saw that. That was dope.
Yeah, shout out to them for coming to the fundraiser. That's why I can't talk. I can't say anything bad about them. I love them all.
Except for who? No, I'm kidding.
Well, there is this one guy. No. It's love, man. It's love. The scene is doing well. Like, honestly, people are showing each other love and giving each other time, and, you know, and audiences are coming in also. That's happening too. I was at a gig yesterday, packed out, dude, like a cannabis club vibe, Urbanville. It was so dope. Yeah, man. It was packed out, and they were there, and they were loving it. So I'm really enjoying that Cape Town clubs are, you know, audiences. I mean, Cape Town audiences are coming out, and people are wanting to have some fun and enjoy life again. It's cool. It's nice to see. Gives us purpose as well.
Gives us
a reason. Gives us a reason to do what we do.
It gets a little draining when you're doing comedy to like five people for like multiple gigs in a row. Like, I remember, like, just at the end of, like, you know, the 2010s and stuff, like, that was happening all around the country, and that shit really gets to you. So it's been dope. Like, even in Durban at the moment, you know, we've been having like a lot more people coming out to the gigs, and it's been
rewarding. Yeah. I don't know if it's a salary thing. Have people been getting paid again? Is corruption down? Things are happening. People are out. Yeah, but something's different. Something's different, bro. People are out, and I love it. I'm here for it. But the thing is, like, playing to five people, bro, you know, on that note, I wouldn't put that as a bad thing, you know, playing to five, like, as a comic, you know, from a comic's perspective. I think playing to five can really strengthen you. It toughens up your immune system. That is a gig for the immune system of a comic. Five people? Yeah. In Edinburgh, I played to two. At least thrice. And that my immune system, dude. I can't get no flus or nothing, bro. I'm tough.
I can't imagine doing an hour to two people, bro. That's impressive.
Multiple times, bro. I'm cold as ice now. I don't care. You're gonna listen. I'm gonna go through my hour, and you're gonna sit there.
It's also with those shows, it does become more personal, and you can, like, you know, like, because I've done comedy to two people as well. Like, I've hosted a gig at the Winston, and only two people came because they saw the post. They were down from Joburg, and they saw the post online, and they're like, we want something to do. And I was like, well, fuck it, we'll give you a show.
Really?
And, like, that was one of my favorite shows we've done, because it was you can focus on those two people and, like, get to know them and, like, really, really enjoy it. But it is daunting.
It is. Yeah, you do have to, at some point, you check in with yourself, like, whoa, am I still present? Are they still present? You have to check in with them as well. Yeah, it's a game of engagement. You got to keep them engaged.
Yeah, which is, you know, a valuable fucking skill to learn. But I we've been chatting comedy, but I realized, like, I still don't really know that much about you. Where about are you originally from? Like, what were your dreams as a kid? Did you want to be a comedian? But because I know you were a break dancer, but, like, what, you just always wanted to perform.
Yeah, I think I think performance has been a thing of mine for a while. But since I've been dancing as a kid, started dancing when I was like 12. And that was, 99. Breakdancing started for me in 1999, bro. And I did, you know, since then I just started competing and doing shows and doing gigs. And I was a B-boy I'm still a B-boy, but the journey has been amazing also of being a breakdancer. I took it real serious too, until a certain point where you get to an age where, you know, you get to an age where the body's just like, okay, dude, these kids are going to beat you
today.
yeah. No. So then, that's when I was like, okay, let's, transition. But I've always been in like a fan of performance and stuff. But when I was a kid, I played soccer. And I was a Man United, I'm still a Man United fan. And, you know, I played football. But I'm from, you know, that was in Bonthierville where I grew up on the Cape Flats. Okay. If anyone's wanting to ask, Bonthierville is like smack bang in the middle of the Cape Flats.
Oh, snap.
Of Cape Town, yeah. And then, you know, I was growing up there and in Mitchell's Plain as well. Like a lot of people know Mitchell's Plain. More like in South Africa, Mitchell's Plain is a name that I think is more popular. But yeah, I grew up in Mitchell's Plain a bit as well. And then, yeah, but my parents were priests, so we moved around a bit.
Wow.
Yeah, so
when that's where you get the comedy from.
You know, standing at the pulpit, watching, you know.
Bro, it's a common story in comedy, bro. It's a common story. Do you know how many comedians, like parents, are like in the church and as like, you know, pastors and stuff like that. It's crazy.
Yeah. Who do you know that are?
Well, no, like just like Sam Kinison himself was like,
a preacher.
He was naturally, but I'm trying to think, there were comedians like on this podcast. I can't remember. That's why I was saying so many, but yeah, there's been South Africans. I think, what was his name again? Ebenezer, I think his parents were in the lead church leadership, if I remember correctly. Yeah, but like even in America, like there's tons, man.
There's a thing. There's a connection there about, you know, priest kids and comedy.
What was that childhood like?
Oh man, it was strict. It was you know, indoors. I could go to soccer practice, you know, do the sports because that was, you know, good for the health and all that. Mm. But other than that, I was, you know, in the house. I started drawing and then I started graffitiing on paper, you know, that's when hip hop.
So that's how you got into it, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, hip hop started listening to rap.
Five disciplines.
Then, yeah, hey man, come on now, hey, the elements of hip hop, as we call them, the five elements. So yeah, then I started doing all that graffiti stuff and got into graffiti, and then from there breakdancing, and then yeah, then it was a rap, and then I stopped playing soccer after that.
But how, like, I mean, I can imagine that must have been a chat that you needed to have to your parents, you know, to be allowed to get into all this hip-hop stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it took a while. It took a while for them to realize that their son wants to spin on his head, you know. they tried to exercise me a few times, you know. I was like, it's just a...
I don't even know if that's a joke.
That's a joke. But as the head spin, you know, the head spin is kind of confusing to people. But now they're cool, man. But it took a while. They didn't want to like drop me off at competitions and things because, you know, they're not sure who's hanging out there.
I guess that also because of the area and stuff, like those are concerns.
Yeah. The security problems, mostly like the security, you know, like, is my son going to be okay type of thing. But eventually there were some church guys who also were dancing. And then that was like, okay, a green card, green light. You know? So then they were like, okay, no, the church boy is also dancing, so he can hang out with them.
Were there any church talent shows?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Church talent shows. I killed many of those, bro. Hey, I can, yeah. But we would just go perform and, you know, not compete at the time. Yeah. Like, just go flex our muscles and then that. But that's how we came up, like church gigs, you know, with my crew. I have a crew called Immortal Style. And, you know, we've been, you know, since the church gigs, we competed internationally and won a whole bunch of stuff. And, you know, yeah, it got crazy after that. But we did a lot of church gigs in the beginning. Yep.
It's funny because that's like, yeah, I know like quite a few of my colored friends in Durban, like that's how they all got started in various different things, whether it's dancing or singing or comedy.
A lot of singers start in the church. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's actually like, that's when you look back, like when you actually look at like the true like talent feeding pools, like you shouldn't check the churches first.
Exactly. Never mind X factor. cross factor. I don't know.
But yeah, so the B-boy stuff, you took it fucking seriously. As you're saying, you guys like traveled overseas. You turned it basically into your job. Like, but that's also like, as a culture to get into here at the bottom of South Africa, how hard was that? Because obviously you're probably trading tapes and stuff like that, or was like the internet already popping?
we got videos. We had VHS. We would copy that from it, from, you know, one friend to the next. And then, yeah, the music, we would, like someone would have a CD, we'll copy that from one friend to the next. And eventually MP3s came out, get a USB, one friend would have 1,000 songs, we copy that one friend to the next. So we pirated a lot of, you know, stuff just so we can get better. Watch international clips. We would, you know, when CDs came out, we would put that on CDs and, you know, yeah, we would study it and just improve as a crew. It was very important to improve as a unit because the more guys train together, the stronger you become. So, yeah, that was like the thing, man. And it's still so fresh in my mind, like how we used to do it, man. Oh, good times, good times.
Yeah, it reminds me of skateboarding. Like it was pretty similar. Yeah. Like we would do the same thing, you know, everyone just copying from like one who would get like a VHS from like, you know, his friend who went overseas or something. And all of us would have that VHS by the end of the weekend, you know?
Exactly. That's how it worked.
Yeah, it's actually like, it's kind of tragic because like that's such a cool, that was such a cool part of culture, you know, just sharing stuff with your friends. And like, obviously these days you've got so much choice and access to everything. But everything feels like more just personalized. You know, you've got your algorithm that's like for you specifically and all these things.
Specifically,
Whereas back then it was like, nah, let's you know, actually trade this thing with my friend. Like, let's, you know, I'm going to come with this, you come with that. We're both learning. We're both like having this connection together, which was such a cool part about growing up when we did.
Yeah, true. I miss that, man. I miss it. But it's nice to have everything stored on one small device.
Until that device crashes.
Okay. There is that. Yeah. Water damage. That's a little bit of water on it and it's over. The party's over. I always think like that's how they, you know, like RoboCop back in the day, they always struggle to like kill him, the criminals. Like, have they ever thought of like a drop of water, you know, just on his neck? RoboCop would like have no one thought of that. I'm not sure if it's just me, but yeah, just a splash of water, bro, behind his ear, he would malfunction.
I'm trying to remember how they try to kill him. Like they ripped him apart, if I remember
correctly. They were trying to rip him apart, but water damage, bro, that is the honestly, that is the killer. That is the, you know, metal killer. We know this.
It's the kryptonite.
The kryptonite, exactly. Surely RoboCop could have been. Yeah.
So, but yeah, like, yeah, you're, like you're saying, though, like you work together as a team, and I assume you each work together to get, like, you know, someone does like a cool move, and you're like, okay, I need to learn that.
Yeah. So that pushes you as well. So, everyone, so also, here's the thing, like, it was in my crew, we'd have a structure, like, everyone has different bodies, so everyone's good at specifics. So, sure. For me, it was the head spin. So, I would handle head spins. And style or, you know, footwork type of things. My friends would do power moves like flares, air flares. My other friend would do, you know, strength stuff. Like, so we would split up the, and then everyone focuses on their thing. And then that's how our crew gets stronger. And I just gave that secret out for free. If there's any B-boy crews listening, hey, man, it's a pleasure. You're welcome.
Yeah, that's what you used to get paid for.
Yeah, no, for real. And we would win, bro. Because, you know, it's just like tactics. It's just tactics. It's like a soccer game, defense, you know, midfield, strike. Each one has its place. So, yeah, in breaking, it can be like that too.
But it's also like that was a big part of like Cape Town culture that from like the outside that I could see at least, you know, hip hop really became pretty big. And like, you know, like b-boying as well. Like I still remember like there was this mad like Red Bull like documentary like maybe 10, 15 years ago that like, you know, focused on some of the crews from Cape Town that was like mind blowing. So like, what was it like to be a part of that at that time? Cause I'm assuming it's maybe not as big as it was.
No. Yeah. Things have dropped a bit, man. Like the scene has kind of dwindled a bit. And I mean, okay. I'm also partially, we all a bit to blame because I'm not involved anymore. And people who aren't involved, we kind of the reason that it's not happening. But the scene has kind of, there's not as many competitions. There's not as many crews. So there's not as much interest. So that's kind of happened in South Africa. But there's people building. I was a builder still. But I won't say I am that active anymore because of my comedy and just like being so, putting myself so fully and wholly into comedy now that I've neglected a bit of that. But I always feel like we can build and rebuild the breaking scene back to how it was by just bringing back some more comps and, yeah, giving people something to aspire to. Because that's what we had when we were coming up. We had competitions. Even if it was just 3-4 a year, you'd train because that was, like, so big for you at the time, you know?
Because you had, like, all these other crews as well that you were competing against. So it's like... Yeah. It pushes you all to just constantly be getting better and better and better. And like, yeah, if you don't have those competitions as much, then people don't necessarily have that outlet to train for.
Exactly. Yeah.
But what was it like being there for the, like, you know, peak of like hip hop?
Oh, it was beautiful, bro. It was unbelievable. We have like our the talent that we had was like world champion level, crazy. I've seen some things that internationally haven't even been done, but that they've been done in South Africa. Moves and I'm talking about moves and b-boys skills. We've been through amazing phases of talent that has been neglected also over time because there haven't been avenues for them to go further. But it was beautiful, bro, to have a full Good Hope Center of like I don't know how many thousand people, 5,000, 7,000, packed with for breakdance, for b-boying, was unbelievable. And that was like a few years of my life, a good couple of maybe about 10 or so years. It was just crazy. It was crazy. And yeah, it was the peak of breaking. And yeah, I don't know how we could reset it to that level, but I guess we'd need a lot of investment and some people to come on board and help the scene grow. But it was beautiful. Yeah, man. And also being part of a crew that was winning was fun. That was because we were, you know, when we started Immortal Style was like our first battle we came like second. And then that was 2007, and then from 2007 we were basically ruling the floor until like maybe 5 years ago.
Did you guys become like mini celebrities?
Not celebrities. We were never kind of celebrities. We were
just, mini celebrities.
We were, we were humblers, bro.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, okay. Well, like people would come out and support and come and cheer for us. That was cool. Yeah.
But, I'm sure you recognize on the streets a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. not really that big. Yeah, a little bit. But yeah, it was fun. It was a fun phase. It was really cool.
Yeah, I think just in general though, like, you know, b-boying, like I know like b-boying still being pushed, like, you know, all around the world. Like there are still scenes and there are
crazy
stuff. But I think hip hop culture itself has changed so much. Like, you know, you don't have the five elements anymore. You've just got hip-hop, like you've just got the music, right?
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah, well, like, the elements exist but just not on the surface level anymore.
Exactly, that's what I mean, like, because you know it was all pushed together before though. That's what I'm saying, like it was all a part of like hip-hop culture universally, whereas now that has just shifted so much that I think stuff like b-boying, graffiti, etc. don't necessarily like get the shine that they deserve.
No, bro. Yeah, they don't. That's a shame. I don't know what happened, but yeah, I guess. But the thing with breaking is now there's a bit of light that's been shining on it with the Olympics and all that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, next year it will be at the Paris Olympics. It won't be at the one after that, but at least people will get to see it again and know that it's still alive at next year's Olympics. Yeah.
Yeah, that could also inspire new people as well.
I hope it works for Cape Town as well. It should. It should give it a slight boost, and then we could hop off that, you know, hop off that momentum.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, these things ebb and flow, like they always do. Like we were just talking about how the comedy scene was being up and down, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. True.
But so like I want to compare a little like with the, you know, b-boying and comedy stuff, because one, you know, they're both quite individualistic, but one's more of a team sport. But at the same time, you're talking about how, like, you know, with b-boying you would push each other to be better. And I feel like that's what, like, a good comedy scene is like as well, you know. You are competing with each other. So yeah, what are some similarities and what are some of the differences between, you know, being a b-boy and being a comedian?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference is that you don't pull a hamstring on stage when you're doing comedy. Or maybe I might, but most people don't. But yeah, you would hope not to. But I think the support structure thing is similar. You also want to lab with people that are labbing hard, that are focused, that know what, you know, they want to figure out a certain, like with breaking, it's a certain move. With comedy, it's a set, it's a joke,
yep.
It's, you know, it's a gag. So I think equally in those two realms, you want to be with the ones that are killing the sets and the moves. And I've always been someone that's pushed for to kind of be good at whatever. If it's breaking, then if it's head spin, I'm going to really try and spin the shit out of a head spin. Or, you know, like I'm going to, so if it's a joke, I'm going to really try and invest my all into a gag.
Where does that, you know, drive come from to, like, you know, push yourself to be like the best essentially? Because not everyone has that. So was it instilled in you from a young age, or was it just a personal thing that you developed?
No, it's a personal thing that just recently, I don't think it's not also like, I might have said it the wrong way, but not to be the best, but to be the best at what you're doing.
Yeah. To be the best you can be.
So. So like I think it's something that just, I realized it when I was dancing. So when I started exploring head spins and I tried to really become a master of, so to speak, head spin, and really trying to do things that most people are, they can't even spin on the head, but if the things that I'm doing are, you know, so I, with head spin, I kind of pushed myself into, okay, this, you can be good at something, one segment of a dance. So when it comes to comedy, I'm pushing myself to be funny in my unique way. That's me. That's Ambrose. You know what I mean? Like, it's not to be competitive, but just to see how funny I could possibly be. That's, yeah, to compare the two.
And within your own style, how would you describe your style?
My style is still a bit sporadic, energetic, unpredictable, but also has a flow to it. When I'm in a good zone or good gag, I have a nice flow. I try and create rhythm with my speech, and yeah, it's that, like, rhythmical
all sounds
and flowy.
Like something that you could have described for breakdancing.
Exactly. Oh wow! You see, maybe I'm still in my worlds are still infused.
I assume putting together dances can be quite similar to putting together like a comedy set. Like, you know,
exactly.
You're structuring things, you're like putting in these moves here and there, you know, you're trying to tell a story, you're trying to show off a little bit.
Hey, that's exactly right, man. You just nailed that. You could be a dance judge. Judge the next, so you think you can.
Yeah, that'll Strictly Come Dancing. I don't know if, like,
hey,
I think,
ballroom, okay.
But that's like low key like a goal of mine, like to one day be on like Strictly Come Dancing. Like, I enjoy dancing. I can't, like, I'm not like trained at all, but like, hey, if I can go learn how to dance for free and do it on national TV and get paid for it, like, fucking A.
Why not? Bring on the penguin suit. Let's go.
Oh yeah, that actually reminds me. Have you like learned other dancing at all?
Totally, yes. I also did some musicals in my lifetime. So one musical, like back 2012, or let me not get the years wrong. Maybe 2010 even. I'm not sure. But I did High School Musical live on stage production, and so that was a tour to China and Taiwan. And on that tour,
dude,
I was hanging out with a lot of ballet dancers and, you know, contemporary dancers. And then I started training in that as well. So I trained not extensively, and like, I don't have a diploma in those things, but I trained with them out of interest, and also it expanded my vocabulary in dance. So that was cool. Yeah. And then since then, I came to Joburg and I did the corporate scene also. I was in Joburg for 3 years doing the corporate dance scene there. So like all your end of year functions, corporates, all the dances you see at those things, I was doing that. And that's like all styles. You have to know a little bit of literally everything. So yeah, that way I was doing that for like 3 years in Joburg while doing comedy as well, the circuit, that side. That was when I was trying to set up my comedy, because I was realizing as a dancer, yay, I'm sweating hard here at these gigs.
And it's also, you only have like so much time.
Yeah. So I started setting my comedy up during that period, those 3 years in Joburg, yeah.
But what made you think like comedy is for me? Because I mean, we all like, you know, some people want to do it their whole lives. Others, like, you know, someone tells them like, hey, you know, you should do this thing. And yeah, so what was it for you?
It's the idea that you can make someone laugh. And that has always been for me. That was my childhood thing, was to tell stories. So I would have a book with stories in it. And you know, like those old school jokes.
I had so many of those books, bro.
So I was one of those kids also, because I was also indoors. And besides drawing, I had to do something else. And it was telling jokes. I was a joke teller as a kid also. And but yeah, that grew into a love for just comedy and stage. And then I studied acting, which helped me with overcoming any stage. I was at City Varsity.
Okay, cool.
In Cape Town, yeah. Cape Town, City Varsity.
It was a good foundation.
Yes, definitely. For performing or any type of performance confidence, that definitely gave me a boost. And yeah, also helped my acting career. But yeah, that's where I overcame those stage traumas. And then, yeah, took those jokes, those childhood dreams and jokes to stage and tried it on stage.
How was your first set?
It was okay-ish, man. Like,
yeah, that's not bad.
I don't think it wasn't too bad. It was good enough to take to another room and try again. And just in case, just to check it out. And then it got better, luckily, in the other rooms. It got better. But yeah, it wasn't a train smash. You know, some guys say their first sets were like horrible, but mine was okay-ish. Because I was really studying comedy. I was studying, not comedy, but I was studying how to do it before. Yeah. You know, so I was really going to as many gigs before my gig, just sitting and watching people.
That's the advice like that I want to give to all like people who want to start stand-up comedy. Everyone's like, how do you start stand-up comedy? Go to comedy shows. Watch how it's done in the clubs, because it's not like it is on Netflix. It's not how it is on YouTube. It's not how it is on TikTok even, you know? Yeah. Like, it's a very different beast. And so if you actually want to get into stand-up comedy, go to your local open mic, watch for a couple weeks, and then ask to join one.
Yes, that is the way to do it. And you won't regret it, because you would have watched and learned and picked up some things that might save your set on the night, rather than going, you know, blindly into the thing. And, you know, yeah. Well, that's another tactic. You could try that and then learn after. You could do that. It's up to you.
But the whole point of this podcast is learning from other people's mistakes. They're learning from those. They don't need to learn from their own.
Uh-huh. There we go. Well, that's free out there now. So there we go.
Yeah. So when was your first death then? If your first couple shows went well.
I think death. Hey man, death was around the corner. Death wasn't too far away. I think I tried entering this competition. I'm not sure what the name was, but it was at Mercury, old Mercury in Cape Town. Bruh, I made a mistake of being a bit confident and having a tequila shot, you know, like, oh no, I got this. And having more than one tequila shot, that's what happened. And I went on stage and I had a lazy tongue. my tongue just resigned just before I went on stage. Like, I quit. And then it was so bad. My speech was so bad, bro. Like, I was slurry. Like, I was hardly audible. So it was terrible. People were like, what? Anyway, it was bad. It wasn't a good gig. That was my first death. And it was upfront, very early in the first few months.
Yeah, it's necessary to happen early because, like, yeah.
Okay, don't drink at, well, don't overdo the tequila at gigs. Yeah, learn. Noted.
Yeah, but then you're going to die again after that.
And also don't have too much confidence.
Well, that's...
Yeah, true. You can die being not drunk too. But also, I think I was too confident. That was the problem there. My confidence was too far and I had to be humbled and that happened. So, yeah, that was good. I enjoy a bit of that.
Yeah, one of the things we have here in Durban comedy, I can't remember who came up with it, but like it was told to me when I was quite young in the scene, is don't let the good gigs go to your head and don't let the bad ones go to your heart, you know?
Exactly. Exactly, man. Yeah, true. Yeah.
Like you're only as good as your next gig.
We all learn it the hard way. Yep, exactly. True. And in Edinburgh, that was crazy because it was like 4 gigs a day, bro. So you'd like kill, die, die, kill, die, die, kill. Like the ratios are just insane. Like depending on the time of the day and the day of the week, you could be dying or killing.
Fuck, I didn't actually realize that you can die at Edinburgh. Like, part of me just imagines, oh, those shows must have all been great. So
It's all great. Oh, no. You can have terrible. You can, not terrible, but you can have some cold crowds. I don't think it's Edinburgh. Everyone's just all happy-go-lucky all the time. No, some crowds come there and go, like, work for it. Let's go. We're going to make you work for it, you know? So then you really have to pull a rabbit out of your butt and do something funny. But then sometimes it doesn't happen. But then you learn, okay, this game isn't just about kill, kill, kill. It's about try. You know, yeah. perform, learn. So that was cool to figure out. I needed to go through that too. That was good.
Did you check out any other cool shows there? Any new acts that like inspired you or anything?
I actually didn't get the chance to. Well, I say so, but I was so invested in my going to gigs and or flyering or, you know, promoting my gig that I ended up not going to too many shows, which, you know, I don't regret. I have no regrets about it because I really had a good time. I had an awesome time, so I can't, you know, why regret that. So, if I go again, I'll go check out some stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess that's the tricky part about it is like you're like as a comedian who loves comedy, you're going to this mecca of comedy, but you're also working and you're working at a level that you've never worked at before. So, like, I totally get that.
Yeah. And also the old student being like Edinburgh being a university of comedy, like I said, I felt like a student, bro. Like I'm in first year comedy at Edinburgh Fest and I'm like a first year going around to these new gigs. Oh, this is here, the new spaces. And there's like people that have been to Edinburgh 10 years and they like, they know the ins and outs. They like chilled, you know, they are the doctorates of the game. Yeah. So yeah, it was kind of exciting being a first year and like, you know, a newbie. But it was so cool to learn and just experience the different levels of the game.
Did you have anyone famous come through to your sets at all?
Well, I had some of my friends South African Tenjiwe came through. She's
she's famous.
You know, shout out Tenjiwe. Yeah. She's my she was really supportive. Lots of love for your sister. And then also Joe White came out. He came. There was one show where Joe White is from Australia. He's a really, really cool comic. Good friend as well. And then there was, some American comics that came through to my show and just came and watched. And from all over, actually, which was cool. It was nice to have comics there. And then, they kind of gave me some more fuel to my fire for my show. But I don't know what famous is. So yeah, those were the people that's
kind of what I mentioned. Yeah. Non-gen pop, basically, you know, people who are comedy.
Shout out Tenjiwe and Joe White.
Definitely need to get Tenjiwe on here. Like that's
I wear.
Like she's
She knows that she's one of those people that knows the in and outs. She was like, yo, Ambrose, this is what you do. This time you be there, you stand there with your flyers and wait for them and do this. I was like, yes, okay, I'll do it. You know, like, she was the chief in
command.
Yeah,
that's fucking dope.
Chieftress. Is that the female? I don't know. The feminine of chief is, but yeah. she was super helpful assistant. Yeah.
Yeah, that's dope. And yeah, because she's just killing it overseas and, you know, obviously locally when she's here. She has unlocked like the cheat codes.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And she's got a wealth of knowledge on her that you should definitely talk to her too. Yeah, I think that would be good.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can reach out. She's been on the list for a while, so I just haven't met her, you know, so that's also a thing. Like, I tend to try and, like,
I can say
hit up people that I already know. But,
yeah.
But sweet, bro. I guess let's go. We're going to head on out. And at the end of every episode, I ask everyone the same question. What is a big mistake that you have learned an important lesson from?
A big mistake that I have learned an important lesson from? Humility comes first. Humility over everything. When you like, the thing is, I think I've learned to not be, sometimes I can be confident to my demise. Oh, is that the word? I've learned to really just be humble and grateful and present, because sometimes your imagination can make you think things of yourself that are not actually the reality. That was important to me, just to stay grounded and stay present in reality.
Yo, that is actually so relatable in some ways. Like, I definitely get you. Like, I have blown smoke up my own ass at times, and it has definitely led to my downfall. And that's why I am so much more humble. Like, I've been humbled.
It's a long road, life, you know. Life is a long road, and there's a lot of people you're gonna meet along the way, and you wanna tread not gently, but you want to tread with kindness and not, you know, just don't wanna be out here hurting people's feelings for no reasons. So yeah, I think that's something that I've learned.
Yeah, I think for me, with regards to that, like, the saying that comes to mind is, you know, do no harm, but take no shit. And that's kind of my philosophy.
And yeah, and I think my philosophy is have you ever heard of, it's better to be a warrior in a garden than to be not a warrior at all. I don't even know if that's the whole quote.
I just think the first part is pretty dope, you know?
Yeah. You don't have to be in a war to be fighting. You can be a warrior but gardening, you know, at peace, but you know what you are, you know what you mean. So yeah, I don't know, I think it's, yeah, there's a lot of principles in life I'm learning, which is part of getting older, I guess. I'm 37 now, 36 almost.
Okay,
37.
Cool, same.
Yeah,
we've like, yeah, so, it seems so like
we're growing and learning.
Yeah, we did a comedy for the same amount of time as well. Shit, okay.
Yeah, like, hey man, there we go.
Yeah.
Same gen.
Sweet, bro. Okay, so when I see you're going to Joburg soon, so we do have quite a decent Joburg listenership. When's that gig?
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's on the 23rd of November, 8 p.m. at the Bioscope. Edmill Park.
It's a sick venue. It's like my favorite Joburg venue at the moment.
Bioscope is nice, man. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. So yeah, people come through, please. I will be there, 23rd.
And any other traveling plans? As you say, you're going to be working on this for a while. You've made contacts overseas and stuff. We're going to be seeing a European tour anytime soon?
I will be at the Leicester Comedy Festival in February.
Oh, wow.
February. I'll be there from the 14th to the 26th. So yeah, I'll be there for 2 weeks in Leicester. I'm doing my show African-ish, and I'll be jumping on some lineups, emceeing some gigs. I've got some fun things lined up for UK already. So yeah, that's what I can say for now.
So good. Sounds good. And yeah, obviously there are also some people from UK who listen, so hopefully they'll come and check you out.
Shout out. If you guys are around, I'll be at King Richard's Pub. African-ish is the show's name.
King Dick. Okay, cool.
Noted. Hey, that's right.
Yeah. Anyway, sweet bro, thank you so much for this. This has been a really fun chat, and I'm keen to hang out with you next time we're in the same city.
Definitely, bro. Yeah, I'm hoping to come to Durban, man. I really want to. So I will hit you up when that happens. And if you come to Cape Town, holla.
Yeah, we'll do that. Sweet, bro.
Shot, bro. Thanks. Peace.
So that was Ambrose. Told you he's a chill dude. Yeah, I really enjoyed that chat. And if you want to check him out and you're in Joburg, go check him out next week. And if you're in England, go check him out next year in February. I think you're in for a treat. Hopefully we can make that Durban gig happen sometime soon. And then, yeah, Durbanites can even check him out. And yeah, we'll see how things go, but we're definitely open to facilitating gigs for touring comedians, you know, through the Not Quite Right team. We've got sound, we've got some lighting, we're constantly building our rig, we're reinvesting our money and shit like that. So yeah, like we can maybe produce some gigs for various people. We're definitely doing quite a few for ourselves. Your December, it's looking good. We've got a roast battle on the 14th, I think. Yeah, I think that's the Thursday before the public holiday. So we're doing a roast battle at Aces. The night before, we'll have the open mic. And the night before that, we're going to be out at the West for Warehouse. The Friday before that, we're going to be at a weed shop. I can't remember where that is right now, but I'll let you know a little closer to the time. So yeah, December is filling up quite nicely. Of course, I'm going to be heading up to Joburg, as I do every year, to visit my family, to go cook Christmas lunch for my mom and my gran. And yeah, I might have a few other things lined up as well. I'm definitely like trying to set up some interviews, and there might be a live podcast thing. There might not. I'm not going to get too ahead of myself with that, but might be able to do a little thing. And so I'll let you know about it if it does happen. But yeah, I'm obviously looking forward to that. I love going and spending time with the matriarchs. And it's also obviously always dope to see all my friends in Joburg. I've got such a dope community of people up there, like multiple different communities of people up there, and with various subcultures and interests that I get to tap into like a couple times a year. This year, like, I haven't been in Joburg anywhere near as much as I usually am. And yeah, money's been a little tight this year. I think everyone's feeling that way. And I mean, I did spend quite a bit going to Cape Town earlier in the year, so that was necessary as well, I think, considering where my head was at and shit, like just with the whole breakup thing and that. That Cape Town trip was, yeah, much, much needed. And it was dope because I got to like actually see the Cape Town scene, and I got to come back inspired to do a lot of the stuff that we've been doing. So yeah, it's a worthwhile investment, but it has meant that, yeah, I haven't been able to go to Joburg as much, and I'm going to be there for, I think I'm going to go up for like 2 weeks, and I'm really, really fucking looking forward to that. So yeah, if you're one of my friends in Josie, hit me up. And also, yeah, if there's any guests you think I should get on, hit me up. bob@almostperfect.co.za. So what else is beating my mind? What else can I chat about before we head on out? I saw that Sarah Silverman hosted The Daily Show as a guest host, which stood out to me a little bit, considering she very recently had to turn her comments on her Instagram off because she posted a pretty genocidal fucking post to her Instagram stories where she was advocating for Israel cutting off water, food, and electricity to millions of people in Gaza. And turns out you can do that, and you can still host the bastion of American liberalism, The Daily Show. So I thought the blackface was, you know, going to be the worst thing about her career. Like, I thought that was always going to be the one thing that people were like, ah, yeah, Sarah Silverman, but, you know, she did blackface. And now it's like, oh, no, she advocated for genocide. That's a hell of a 1-2 punch. But as we all know, America is just a deeply hypocritical, like, nation. I mean, the media, the government, fair amount of the fucking people just have their heads up their fucking asses and really get sucked into some pretty indefensible fucking positions, to be honest. Like, They're the biggest exporters of fucking war and terror around the world, and have been for a very long fucking time, pretty much since World War II. And they dare to try and, you know, police anyone else and moralize to anyone else. But yeah, I think that's been at least one of the things that's been highlighted, at least with this current, like, multiple global conflicts, actually, is just the hypocrisy of the West. And I can see, yeah, this is going to be a catalyst for a lot of long-term change, I think. So we'll see how it all plays out. That brings us to the shout out. Now, every week I shout out the titular titles tier over at patreon.com/almostperfect. So shout outs to Rousseau, the storage clerk of subtle heresies in the Lesser Overberg region, Russell Grant, the Far East correspondent, Neil Green, the key grip, and a guy who I'm going to chat to on the phone just now, Karan Slemon, the almost perfect hedge fund manager, Ruth Ventura, the director of purchasing, Karan Chetty, the assistant to the regional manager, Kath Jenkins, the inevitable ruler of the universe, and Queen Swifty, and then Stephen Olivier, the executive producer. A big thank you to all of you. A big thank you to Damien Root for providing the bed music you hear underneath my dulcet tones and the banging intro you hear at the beginning of each and every episode. And of course, lastly, but not leastly, thank you to you. I'll catch you on the flip side.